event for me for two reasons. One reason is the topic, Rav Yitzchak Shiner, who is someone that I was very, very close with, extremely close with Rav Yitzchak Shiner. He was a Talmud of my great-grandfather. And then when I connected with him here, he was very much Makar of me. He was the Rashiv in Kamenitz, and I'm sure that I'm not going to tell you more about him and or more about this conversation he had with Rav Yitzchak Shiner, the person who spoke by Siyam HaShas. He was one of the elders, the older statesmen, the Rosh Hashivas that we had here in Eretz Yisrael, an American from Pittsburgh. When he had gone to yeshiva, this very first Rebbe was my great-grandfather, so therefore, we had a very warm relationship for that reason. So I wanted myself to be able to listen to Nachman tell the story because no one spins a story as well as
now you make it sound like it's not true.
No one tells a story. And it spins a tale, I got it. Anyway, the other reason is because of the person who's speaking, my dear Talmud Reb Nachman Seltzer. Nachman, basically, you could say, was the very first Talmud that I had in the Mir Yeshiva. When I opened the shir, Nachman was we learned Bava Kama together with a Gishmak and a Bren, and we stayed close from then. We stayed close. Nachman would come visit, and we first opened the yeshiva, came with his family, and spoke here. We actually went through his first manuscript on his very first book. Me and my wife got it in photocopies, and I helped him with one of the other books, a Kitzer. But it's a big pleasure to have him. He spoke here in yeshiva when the Olam was in quarantine, and the boys would tell me, wow, that was like phenomenal, amazing. So to have him back is amazing. My pleasure and honor, my dear Talmud, Reb Nachman Seltzer.
Rabbi, so you mind starting with a song? Can we start with a song? We're going into Rosh Hashanah. Yeah, is that okay? Can we start with a song?
L'mancho Elokeinu Haseh Eloi Lanu Rei Asiro Zeinu Eidalim Virekim L'mancho Keinu Asay V'loy Lanu Riei Amido Seinu Dalim V'rekim Oy Ha Nisham Nisham alach Aguf alach Aichoso Oy ha nisham alach
Shkayach, everybody, so good to be back. Chvoy de Rosh Hashiva, his mom is a tremendous pleasure. When I used to finish going on a date, I would come to Rosh Hashiva's house, he'd make me a steak. I read it's too many. Okay, don't expect that. There's way too many guys. I shouldn't have said that. No, but to Chumash, like the epitome, Sheva Brachas in the house, that's right. Wednesday night, Rav Nissen spoke, the famous Don't Be a Third speech, that's right. The kids are unbelievable, tremendous kesher. So, like this. So, when I was asked to write a book, book of Rabbi Yitzchak Shiner, Zechon Levracha, and I didn't really know anything about Rabbi Yitzchak Shiner at that time, and Baruch Hashem, I got to learn a lot about him. And I want to tell you, as we're going into Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, I want to share with you something. There's a Rebbe in the yeshiva, Rav Naftali Geffen, and he's a phenomenal speaker. Maybe you should, I don't know, he speaks Hebrew, but it might be Kedai anyways. He's probably one of like the best speakers I ever heard. And he was telling me, he's very close to Rabbi Yitzchak Shiner, and he told me about a conversation that happened on a Yom Kippur night, and I want to share that with you, because it's not just a conversation, it's a yisoid in life. And I think it's you'll walk into Yom Kippur with this, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur with this. It's a tremendous thing. So I'm going to quote to you from Naftali Geffen. I used to accompany Rav Yitzchak from his yeshiva to the house, Tzfanya 51, from the yeshiva. They would walk from Yecheskel to the house, back and forth. They would talk and learning, and they would get so into it that they would forget what they were doing, and they would walk back and forth from the yeshiva to the house, and back to the yeshiva, and back to the house, and they would just forget about the time. And then one time they sat down at a bus stop, and until the Rebbetzin comes out looking for him, and she sees him talking and learning at the bus stop, and she's like, "Are you talking and learning? That's fine. That's okay." Meaning the Rebbetzin was on top of the situation. There was no such thing as stab batol in the house on a Shabbos meal. At a Shabbos meal, you didn't talk in English because she wanted to know what was being talked about. She talked in Hebrew. Otherwise, she would get nervous that they're talking, they're battling. No battling in the house of the granddaughter of Rav Baruch Ber. And so he said to me like this, one Yom Kippur night, we're leaving Kamenetz after Ma'ariv. We're dressed in our kittels, and I want you to picture the scene. It's after 10 at night. It's all peaceful in Yerushalayim. Yom Kippur night, everybody finished davening, they're going home. The Rosh Yeshiva is very serious that night. He turns to me and he says, "Nu Naftali, do you have a chiddush that has to do with Yom Kippur? Something to tell me, a chiddush, nice chiddush." It happened to be, he said, "I had a big chiddush. I had a big question that came to me, and I was able to say, actually, Rosh Yeshiva, I do have a kasha." So he looks at me. "I have a kasha," I said, "but I don't have an answer." So he's waiting. He said, "What's the kasha?" So I say like this: the Mishnah Berurah in Hilchos Rosh Hashanah quotes a line. We say, Avinu Malkeinu mecheiv ader b'sheinu mechadisenu mineged einecha. And the Mishnah Berurah says, "I have a problem with this line." And the source is the Magen Avraham. And he switches. He says the two words in the line need to be switched. You have to switch it. You say mecheiv ader chadisenu v'b'sheinu mineged einecha. You should switch it. Why? So he says like this: when Chazal used the term chait, they're referring to averus b'shoigeh, unintentional averus. A pesha is referring to someone who sins b'mezid with an intention to do an avera. Since we're coming here to ask Hashem for rachmanis, it would make sense to ask for rachmanis on the less serious thing first, right? You do first the shoigeh, then the mezid. Why are we asking first for the mezid, then for the shoigeh? It doesn't make sense, right? We always, when you go to your father, right? What do you say to him? You let's say, I don't know, I'm sure none of you would ever do such a thing. Let's say you broke the air conditioning, central electric in the house, and you broke a vase. What are you going to start with? What are you going to say? Ty, I broke the central air conditioning, then go for the vase. You're going to say, no, you build it up, right? So he's saying, this is the kind of Mishnah Berurah says. Doesn't make sense. The order the Chazal said, got to switch it. And if there are Sidurim, which you'll find in asterisk in the Siddur, it says, you switch the line in the Mishnah Berurah. So, says the Naftali Geffen to the Rosh Yeshiva, here's my kasha. In all five tefillos on Yom Kippur, we say the words, Elekeinu v'elekev eseinu. Michal la'avoy niseinu b'yoy makipurim azeh. Mechei v'aveh p'sheinu v'chad yiseinu m'negin enecho. Shenemar, anoichi, anoichi, umoichi p'sheach l'mani, v'chad yiseach aloy eskor. V'oyme, mechisi ka'o p'sheach v'cho'on v'chad yiseach. So here's what I don't understand. I see that the Mishnah Berurah makes a point of switching the order of these two words during Avinu Malkeinu. Is he going to do the same thing in all five Shemoneh Esreis? In every Shemoneh Esrei in Yom Kippur, is he going to switch the order? Every time he put the mezid before the shoigeh, he's going to switch it in every. What's he going to do? He's going to start challenging the decision of the Anshei Knesset Gedolah. That's the quoting Pesukim in the Torah. What's he going to do? The Mishnah Berurah is saying we got to change the order. But Chazal set it up that way in all of the Shemoneh Esreis. It's all set up the way the Mishnah Berurah doesn't agree with. You understand the kasha, everybody? Yeah? Am I clear? Again, I'm not sure if I'm clear. The Mishnah Berurah has a problem. We ask forgiveness from Hashem first. We are Bnei Shalom. Help us out first with the mezidim, the things, the intentional errors. You should ask for help for the unintentional first. Build up to the intentional, right? That's what Mishnah Berurah says. So he says you got to switch the order. Says the Rav Naftali Geffen, Teresa Shiner, I don't understand. Every Shemoneh Esrei, we ask first about intentional and then unintentional. So what's the Mishnah Berurah going to say? You got to switch the order in every Shemoneh Esrei. It doesn't go with Chazal. We got a Syria. What do we do with this? That's the kasha. So Yitzchak Shiner is standing there. Yom Kippur night, outside Kamenetz, Geula, it's quiet. Maybe a couple of chassidim walking home in their kittels, but pretty much quiet. And he says like this, how do we handle this? We could say the Mishnah Berurah is not right. Chazal don't agree with him. But the question is still a good question. Why are we asking for Rachmanis for the worst type of Avera first? It's a good question. We need to figure out why Chazal said to do this. Suddenly, Rabbi Yitzchak Shiner comes up with the resolution. And he says like this. I have an idea. Now, Naftali, do you know the vart for a Baruch Ber? Dover Kata and Dover Gadol? That's what he says to me. You hear this? You know the vart? There's a vart from Baruch Ber, Davar Gadol, Davar Katan. So he says, Rav Tali says to me, happens to be I heard this dvar from the Rosh Yeshiva a bunch of times, but I loved hearing him say it, so I pretended he never said it, so he would say it again. Because I loved hearing him say the vart. So Keili doesn't know the vart, and the Rosh Yeshiva is going to say the vart. What's the vart? So the Rosh Yeshiva is like this. This Gemara brought down a Shas two times. Hila Zokeh at 80 Talmid. The greatest Talmid, Yadisa Ben Oziel. Smallest Talmid, Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai. Now, which is very interesting, because Yochanan Ben Zakkai was huge. Can any of you tell me what he's famous for? What was Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai famous for? What famous story in the Gemara with Yochanan Ben Zakkai? Anyone? What? What was he famous for? What happened with him? Famous story in the Gemara of Yochanan Ben Zakkai. What did he do? Famous escape. What was the escape? Anyone? Where did he escape from? How did he escape? You know. Okay. Oh. He was dead. He was pretending to be dead in a box. Remember that from the old city? Get out? Okay. I'll put in the biggest Talmud is Rabbi Yonasan Ben Azir. The smallest Talmud is Yochanan Ben Zakkai. Now, smallest Talmud, this person, the Gemara says he knows everything. He knows Sichas the Kolam. He knows the palm trees, what they speak, how they talk to each other. I don't know if you know the palm trees talk to each other. I was talking to somebody, Gary Targo, I want to send you a book. He runs Detroit. I want to send you a book. So he sends me a book about trees. He's into trees. He sends me a book about trees. Now, I have to tell you, I'm not into trees. But the writer was such a good writer, he's able to make trees interesting. And there's a whole thing going on. You don't know. It's like trees talk to each other. They get married. They have children. You don't realize. They die. They live. It's a whole thing. How do they eat? What do they eat? It's a whole world going on. We have no idea. So Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai, he understood the sichas to come. When palm trees talk to each other, he understood the conversation. He understood the conversation in the language of birds, the language of Shadim. He knew how to talk, when Shadim talk to each other, Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai, he could understand. He could listen to the conversation. Says the Gemara, Lo yiniach davar gadol v'davar katan. He knew everything, the biggest things and the smallest things. So the Gemara says, okay, that's nice. What is davar gadol and what is davar katan? What is that? When you say the biggest things, what do you mean? And when you say the smallest things, what do you mean? So the Gemara says, I'll tell you what I mean. Says the Gemara like this. Davar katan, Rabbi said, anyone want to take a guess? What's a small thing and what's a big thing? Anyone want to take a guess what that is? What do you think a big thing is? If you want to say, raise your hand, what do you think? What do you think? What? The mezuzah. So again, so the Gemara is talking about, like, in Yonim and the Gemara, different things, like, for example, big thing, I'll tell you, yeah, what do you want to say? Talk, man. The Gemara is like this. Davar gadol is Maisa Merkava. Maisa Merkava is a Davar gadol. Maisa, you know what that is? Rabbi Yechezkel Ben Buzi saw a vision. Maisa Merkava, that's the Davar gadol. But what's a Davar katan? The Gemara says Davar katan is all the discussions of Abaye and Rava. Havayas Abaye the Rava. The conversations of Abaye and Rava. In the Gemara. Basically, what does it mean? All of Shas. All of Shas is Davar katan. Does that make sense? It's strange. To call Shas Davar katan, Abaye v'Rava is a Davar katan. How could that be? So Rabbi Baruch says, I don't understand. How could you call a Havayas Abaye v'Rava, the discussions of Abaye v'Rava? We're busy with that all day long. Every day you learn Gemara, chances are you're talking about Abaye and Rava. So you tell me that's a small thing, Abaye and Rava? What we're doing in Yeshiva all day long, just today, how many of you have mentioned the word in the name Abaye and Rava? And that's a small thing? How could that be? How could you call that small? Says Baruch Be'ez Kasha. So Rabbi Baruch Be gave an answer. Rabbi Yitzchak Shaina said, it's a mamish of Baruch Berdik, something out of Birka Shmuel almost. And this is all happening on Kippur night as they're walking home from Kamenitz to his house. I want to tell you a mashal from Rabbi Baruch Be, Rabbi Yisai. Okay? I have two people. I have Reuven, I have Shimon. Each one did something. Who did the bigger thing? Okay, you ready? This is the question. Reuven's walking down, he goes on a tiyu. He goes on a trip with the yeshiva, and they're going, I don't know where they're going to. They're going, I don't know, the next amazing trip. Maybe rent the rocket and go up to the moon. I don't know, the next trip.
Morocco.
He's walking in Morocco. He's in Morocco, and there's a man-made lake somewhere in Morocco, and Reuven's walking with the yeshiva, and as he's walking down this tayelet, this boardwalk by the man-made lake in Morocco, and he's wearing one of these white long robes, because that's what you wear in Morocco, and a fez on his head, jalabia. And he sees a jalabia, thank you, he's wearing a jalabia and a fez, and like at a jaunty angle on his head, and he's walking down the boardwalk, and suddenly there's a family of Jewish
people. He can tell they're Jewish because he sees the socks. And he understands the black socks, he chaps, and the baseball cap, he chaps that they're Jewish. Right? Wherever you go in the world, you see the Jewish families. I was in Venice on a boat, and right across the, on the other side of the boat, there's this boat passing by, and I see, like, the Yankee cap, look, bang, Jewish family, you know, right away. That's it. Yes. You want to say something? Okay. Uncle Putty. So Reuven sees this kid, this family walking by this man-made lake in Morocco, and suddenly a kid leans over the gate and he falls into the water. And Reuven, without thinking, he runs, he happens to be a good swimmer, and he dives into the water to save the kid. That's what happened. That's what happened with Reuven. That's the story with Reuven. He jumps in the water to save the kid. And he risks his life to save the kid. Now what did Shimon do? This is what Shimon does. Shimon goes to Tzfas for Shabbos. And he's up in Tzfas at Erev Shabbos in Mendes. Are you familiar with Mendes? Anyone? Yes, you can buy all you need for Shabbos in Mendes. And I'm just, Agav, if you're in Mendes long enough, someone's for sure going to come over to you and ask you to pay for the kugel. It's like a dover, a burr. You stay there. It happened to you. No question. I had a friend. He was eating there with his family. And some Yerushalmi guy came. And he spent like 1,500 shekel on his family for Shabbos. And he calls out, "Who wants a mitzvah? Who wants a mitzvah?" And he got to buy it. So that's the way it is. In Mendes, if you're there in Mendes Erev Shabbos, no question, it's just a matter of time. And someone's going to come over and ask you to pay for his arvus. I'll go upon him. There you are, you're Shimon, and you're standing there at Shabbos. And this guy comes over to you and he says, "Can I borrow?" He doesn't ask you to pay. "Can I borrow some money? Because I have to pay for my kishka." So you're Shimon, you're back in your mind. You're like, "Should I? I don't know this guy. Maybe he's not going to pay me back. I don't have to do this. I don't go get a job," you think to yourself, right? Okay, whatever. I'll go upon him. So you're like, "Should I do it? Should I not do it?" Back and forth. "He's not going to pay me back." Right? I'm sure you've had this conversation you had at some point in your life. And in the end, Shimon, you, decides to lend this guy the money. So Rabbi Achber asks, who did the bigger action here? Who did the Davar Gadol? Who did the Davar Katan? Is Reuven the Davar Gadol jumping into the water in Morocco to save the kid? Is that a Davar Gadol? Or is Shimon lending this guy money to buy a piece of kugel on Shabbos? Is he the Davar Gadol? What do you think? Rabbi said, what do you say in the back over there? You understand it. Who's the Davar Gadol? Who's the Davar Katan? Reuven is the Davar Gadol. Who agrees that Reuven? Yeah, what do you want to say? Shimon is the Davar Gadol. Why Shimon is the Davar Gadol? Meaning like this. So say, how do you bring it home? Bring it home. What are you saying? 1 second. What, go. Shh, 1 second. I want to hear. Bring it home. Okay. All right, so bring it home to our Shiloh. Why is that bigger? So you say, for Reuven, it wasn't hard. Reuven didn't have a Shiloh. He's a kid. He knows how to swim. I remember once Rav Noach Weinberg came to Torah, when I was there as a Bacher, and he was giving a speech, and it was a Neveh Shabbaton. They don't really know what Neveh is, but it was a yeshiva, and it was a Neveh Shabbaton, and he was these guys sitting with everyone, and Rav Noach was talking about somebody on the Hudson River, and what would you do if this guy falls into the water? And he turns to one of the Vega, he's like, "Would you jump in the same?" The guy's like, "No." I'm not to not know what to do with that. Okay, but I'm not talking about a guy like that. I'm talking about a regular guy who jumps in the water and he doesn't even think because he knows how to swim. Of course he's going to jump in to save the kid. What's the Shiloh? He doesn't even have a Shiloh. Of course he's going to do it. Where's the Shiloh? Are you going to lend the guy money? He's not going to pay you back. You don't know. You understand Rabbi Achmer saying, this is a Davar Gadol. You would think, the Talmid said, "What are you talking about, Rebbe? That's a Davar Gadol. Davar Gadol is saving a kid's life." Rabbi Achmer said, "No, it's not. Because this Pashi is going to save the kid's life. Who wouldn't jump in to save the kid's life?" Obviously, it's a Davar Katan. Davar Gadol is where you I don't know, should I do it? Should I not do it? I don't know. If it's my last 5 shekel, I don't know what I'm going to do. He's not going to give it back. Right? That's a Davar Gadol. Chiddush. So now, according to these two scenarios, yeah? Shimon has a choice, Rabbi Achmer says. He has a lot of reasons why he doesn't have to lend the guy the money. He doesn't know the guy. He never met him before. Why should he take the risk of losing money? But he overcomes an Isaiah and he lends him the money. So Rabbi Achmer is saying, when a person does something because he has no choice, it's not a big thing. He has to do it. He's not making a decision. It's not a challenge. The second he sees the guy, he jumps in to save it. Of course he's going to do it. What's the Shiloh? There's so many stories about Rebbeim are on trips and they jump in the water. They save their kid. They save the Talmud. There was a Yerushalayim person. There was a hole in the ground. The kid fell in. A guy jumped in to save him. There's stories like this all the time. So what is a Davar Gadol? A Davar Gadol is when something is difficult. When you have reasons not to do it. When you can justify turning away. That's a Davar Gadol.
So Shimon did the bigger thing, because Shimon could have said no. And Reuven couldn't, because Reuven had to jump into the water and save the kid. So Baruch Benah, he brings the point home. You see where he's going with this? Where's he going with this? Rabbi Achber asked the kash. Now, I want to ask you, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Rabbi Achber. Who was Rabbi Achber? What was he? Why? I'm going to say a line Rabbi Achber said. But I want to explain first who Rabbi Achber was. There was a bacher in the yeshiva, Rabbi Achber. And he didn't have documents that he needed in Europe. He didn't have the documents. And every time the police would come to the yeshiva looking for guys, so he'd have to hide. And one time the police came to the dorm. They're knocking on the door, and she doesn't know what to do. Should he jump out the window and go running away? If they catch him, it'll be worse. Maybe he should go and just give himself up. He doesn't know what to do. So Rabbi Achber lived right next door, and he did climb out the window to go right next door to Rabbi Achber's house to ask his rabbi, what should he do? Should he run away, or should he give himself up? What should he do? So he comes next door, and he knocks on the door. The Rebbetzin answers the door, and he says to the Rebbetzin, I need to speak to Rosh Yeshiva. And the Rebbetzin says, you can't. He says, why not? He says, because Rabbi Achber is preparing the Shir Klali today. And everyone knows you can't disturb him when he's preparing Shir Klali. You just can't disturb him. She said, but it's Pekuach Nefesh. She said, okay, it's Pekuach Nefesh. Fine, then come in. Good luck, you know, like good luck to you, sir. So he comes in. This bacha comes into the house. Rabbi Achber is sitting there with a rashba. So the bacha comes into the room. And Rabbi Achber, it took him time until Rabbi Achber, Chapti was there. And then he sees this guy and he looks at him like, what do you want? So Rabbi Achber told him, the police are looking for me, and I don't know what to do, and should I give myself up? And Rabbi is looking at him, like his eyes are open wide, and they're looking at him, and he finishes telling Rabbi Achber the dilemma, and Rabbi Achber looks at him and he goes, I didn't hear you. Could you say it again, please? Again, he was looking at him the whole time, like straight at, like I'm looking into you, but he didn't hear. So again, the Bacha tells him the same story, and again, the Rabbi Achber said to him, I didn't hear you. And this happens five times. So after fifth time, Rabbi Achber says to him, I feel that you're telling me something very important, but I can't hear you. So go to the next room. My son-in-law, Rabbi Reuven, is there. You could ask him what to do, and maybe he could help you. So Naftali Geffen said to Rabbi Yitzchak Shiner, who loved to say over the story, when he was talking about Amelus HaTorah, he said to him, Rabbi, I don't understand. The Brisker Rav said that if a person keeps his Gemara open when he's supposed to close his Gemara, then his Gemara is closed even when it's open. And if he closes it when he's supposed to, then his Gemara is open even when it's closed. How could Rabbi Achber have not been able to hear what in a case of Pekuach Nefesh? I don't understand. You have to be able to close the Gemara sometimes. So Yitzchak Shiner said to him, Naftali, I'm surprised that you've asked me such a question. I said, what do you mean? He says, Naftali, let's say you have a window and the window has bars on it. And you go to the window and somebody dares you to stick your head through the bars. Okay? And you somehow manage to get it out. And now you can't get it back in. So you're sticking your head and sticking out the window through the bars. And you see something going on downstairs. Something's happening. And you want to go help. You want to save whoever, whatever's got. But you can't because your head is stuck through the bars. What are you going to do? Nothing, right? Because he had it stuck through the bars. There's nothing you could do about it. He said, Rabbi Achber, when he's preparing for Shir Klali and he was learning the Rashba, his head was stuck in the Rashba, like his head was stuck through the bars. You were talking to him, but his head was stuck in the Rashba. He couldn't understand. He couldn't hear you. He pushed it, couldn't hear you. His head was stuck through the bars. That's all it is. When he learned, he wanted to hear, he loved to hear, he wanted to help his Talmud, but he couldn't hear. How? His head was stuck through the bars. Now we can take this further, we can go, and I asked other questions on it, but this is a yesoid he would love to say over when it came to the hasmada of the Zayda, Rabbi Achber. Now if you understand this about Rabbi Achber, so now, this is what Rabbi Achber takes. He takes this question of Dava Gadol, Dava Katan, the Ruvay, saving the kid, Shimon, lending money, he says like this, Rabbi Yisai, let's take it home. Can a Yid live without Abaye and Rava? Can a Yid live without Gemara? No. That's our life. And if that's the case, and there's no way the Torah we learn is not an integral part of our lives, it becomes Dava Katan, because it's so important. There's no way you can't learn without Gemara. Of course you're going to learn Gemara. You're not going to learn Gemara. You know what Gemara is. The second you know what Gemara is, how could you not learn Gemara? It's Dava Katan for you. You have to. What about Maaseh Merkava? You don't have to have Meisim Merkava. Most people don't know Meisim Merkava. Okay, if you know Meisim Merkava, it's a Davar Gadol. It's a Davar Gadol. It's a big thing. You don't need it. But Abaye V'Rava, it's Pashit that you can have Abaye V'Rava. All this, Rabbi Yitzchak Shaina said to Naftali Geffen on Yom Kippur night. He says, I want to answer your question. You asked the question. You said, how could it be that we ask for Rabbi Shalom to help us with the Mezidim before the Shagim? Why do we ask for the intentional sins? Let's ask for the Shagim first. Let's build it up slowly. He says, but Rabbi Shalom, we can't do that. Why? You come to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shagigs, let's be honest. Shagig you could deal with. You say to yourself, okay, I didn't mean to do it. I'll get to it. I'll do teshuvah for Shagigs. I'll do it. Amazing? Baruch Pa says, amazing? How could you live life with amazing on your shoulders? If you know that you went on purpose to do an Avera? You come to Kadosh Baruch Hu on Yom Kippur and you have these Averas on your shoulders of that you did on purpose? That's like a Bayev, that's like Gemara. It's like a Bayev Rava. It's like, you can't. There's no way. How could you live like that? So of course you're going to ask for that first. But right? You can't even. How do you deal with it? You can't deal with it. You got to get rid of it first. You just got to, right? There's no way you can live like that. Says Rabbi Yitzchak Shiner. He says like this. He says, we come to Rabbi Yitzchak. We say, please help me do teshuvah for the mezidim that I did. I cannot go on this way. I cannot exist knowing I'm walking around carrying such a load on my back. There is no other option but for you, Hashem, to help me deal with these averas because I cannot deal with it on my own. I have to get rid of it. I can't. I got to get rid of it. That's right away. That's like the biggest. I got to get rid of it right away. This is the conversation that happened on Yom Kippur night. I want to tell you something, Rabbi Yitzchak. Who was Rabbi Yitzchak Shiner? I want to tell you two nekudas to bring it home, who Rabbi Yitzchak Shiner was. Okay? Two nekudas. Nekuda number one is this. I spoke to many people. I went around speaking to many people, and I spoke like along the one of the people I was told to interview was a person, his name is Aviezer Wolfson. He's the father of the Wolfsons, the Rosh Yeshivas, unbelievable people. He himself is famous. He composed a song, Ma'ashiv. You know Ma'ashiv, everyone sings it. He composed it. He also composed other songs. He's a special person, very interesting person. And he told me, you have to speak to my son, Aryeh, Rabbi Aryeh. So I call him up. And this person, he's brilliant. He says to me, Rabbi Aryeh is the son I found the hardest to be mechanech. He has this mind of his own. I don't even know how to deal with him. He's like this brilliant guy. So I call him up. I said, tell me about you and Rabbi Yitzchak Shiner. Tell me, what's with you and Rabbi Yitzchak? What's your relationship? So he says like this. My whole life, I think different than other people. I'm afraid I'm apikoros. A lot of times I say things that people, they look at me, you're apikoros. Because I think differently. Baruch Hashem, I found that I'm not apikoros. I'll tell you how. When I came back to Eretz Yisrael from Philly Yeshiva, I came to Eretz Yisrael, my father said, you need a good charusa. He was already teaching Rosh Samech. He was a bacher. He's already a rebbe Rosh Samech. You need a good charusa. And I'm going to ask Rabbi Yitzchak Shiner if he can learn with you b'charusa. So he calls Rabbi Yitzchak Shiner. Could you learn with my son b'charusa? Rabbi Yitzchak Shiner says, of course. Send him over. So for a year and a half, Aryeh Wolfson learns with Rabbi Yitzchak Shiner Gemara, Rashi, Tosfos, Mefarshim, Gvaldik. It's very nice. And every Shabbos, they have a Chavrusa Shaft in the house before the Suda, in Chumash, but all the other Mefarshim off the beaten track, life, medicine, I don't know, everything. And after a year and a half, it's over, he gets married, he moves away, he goes to Bnei Brak, he has business, and what happens? One day he tells me, I have a Chavrusa, he's a Rosh Shiva, and one day we had a meeting with Reb Chaim Greinemann in Bnei Brak. And somehow the conversation turns to the question of whether there is hashgacha pratis in the world or not. And we have a certain shita. Rav Chaim Greinemann says the accepted shita, which is everybody knows that every little tiny thing, if you stub the toe, there's hashgacha. If a bee flies in, it's hashgacha. And I look at Rav Chaim Greinemann and I say, wait a second, that doesn't make any sense because the Rambam, Macharusa, gives me a kick under the table. He says, what are you arguing with Rav Chaim Greinemann for? So I'm like, yeah, I'm a Wolfson, he says. We argue with everyone. Doesn't matter. We have a shita, we argue. But anyways, the next day, his chavrusa says, listen, we have to clarify the situation. We need to go to a person who's holding the biggest baki in Ashkafa. We have to figure this out. We have a problem here. What do we do? The Rambam doesn't agree with everyone. All the accepted school of thought in Ashkacha Pratis, we have a problem with that. It doesn't work with the Rishonim. What do? We have to go. Who's the biggest genius when it comes to Ashkafa? Of Gedalia Nadel. He lives in Bnei Brak, Baruch Chaim. We're going to go to him. We're going to ask him the Shaila. We live in Bnei Brak, so we go lunchtime to Rav Gedalia Nadel. We come to his house. His door is open. He's eating lunch. So we said, oh, no, we'll come back. He said, no, sit down. What's going on? What's on your mind? So we told him. We have a question. Rav Chaim Greenman said like this, that there's Ashkacha Pratis in every single thing. But the Rambam writes, I have a hard time believing, says the Rambam, that if a fly flies to a fish and the fish eats the fly, there's Ashkacha Pratis. And the Rambam says that Ashkacha Pratis only comes to people who believe in Hashem, and the more you're Shemaim and the more Das you have, the more Ashkacha Pratis there is. But the little things like a fly flying to a fish, there's no Ashkacha Pratis. So how do we reconcile the Rambam and the Ramban, who agrees with the Rambam, except where the Ramban has later on contradicts that and says, not like that, but how do we deal with this? We have a big problem. What do we do? So Gedalia Nadal looks at me, I'm a Chavrusa, and he says like this. He says, let me ask you a question. Are you one of those people that believes that the world was around for 6,000 years? So he says, do you believe? He says to me. I said, no, definitely not. The world is around for much longer than that. Every day of creation is like 1,000 years. What about you? He says to Machavusa. Also, I agree. The world was around for much longer. So Gedalia says, that's the answer. Now, I'm at a loss there. So I say to Arya Wolfson, I say, okay, can you explain that to me? How does that answer your question? It's a good question. How does that answer the question? He says, I can't explain it to you. It's a 10-year shir process. And this answer comes in the sixth year. And so I can't explain to you on one foot on the telephone how to answer something that takes 6 years of shiurim to get to. I'm like, okay, fine. That's it. Nisht is nisht. But that's not even the point. Because the point was, the next day, Arya Wilson gets a phone call from a Gedalia Nadal. And he says, I like the way you think. I want you to come back to my house. And he comes back to the house of Bnei Brak, and he says, what? He says, I like the way you think, and I'm inviting you to come to my house every day during lunchtime, and we can have a chavrusa shav together, and we'll talk about everything, whatever we want to learn, we're going to learn together. Beautiful. So every day he starts coming to Gedalia Nadal's house, and they start, he says, that he becomes my Rebbe in Ashkafa, and I owed him a tremendous debt of gratitude, because I learned from him that I'm not an apikaris. He said to me, you're not an apikaris, they're just dumb. But you're not an apikaris. I felt very good. I felt much better about myself. Baruch Hashem. Al Kapanim, he gets into Mar Nevuchim. He becomes the number one guy in Mar Nevuchim. Today, he has written Sfarim, he gives Shiurim, and he is the Mr. Mar Nevuchim. He is holding, and all the things that nobody knows, he's holding there. And here's where I get to the point with Yitzchak Shiner. He says, 20 years after I learned with Yitzchak Shiner in Yeshiva, 20 years later, I'm on a plane going to America for business. I'm in business class, and Yitzchak Shiner is sitting in business class, and I have all my sfar with me because I have to prepare my shiurim. And Yitzchak Shiner sees me. He says, what are you doing? So I told him, I'm preparing a shiur on Mar Nevuchim. He said, oh, very nice. And I'm thinking to myself, what does he know about Mar Nevuchim? He learns Baba Kama. He learns Baba Metzia. Maybe Shabbos. Okay, he knows Halacha. He doesn't know Mar Nevuchim. So he says, let's talk a little bit. So Rav Arya Wilson says, I start talking to him, and we didn't stop for the next 7 hours. He knew every single thing. He knew every Rambam. He knew everything. Everything I thought I'm holding, he knew it all. The Rosh Yeshiva was busy with the brisket and the chalais and this and that. He knew everything. Agav, his son told me, his son, Avram Shine, is Rosh Yeshiva of Kamenetz today. He said when he took a break from Kamenetz and he went to learn a brisk for a few years by Rav Beryl. And he said that when he came to Rebbe'el, so Rebbe'el asked him, why do you want to come to the yeshiva? The brisk could never make it easy for you. Why do you want to come here? So he said he gave the wrong answer. He said, because I hear that there's a lot of good guys here in the yeshiva. And the answer is because of the shir. But he said the wrong answer. The Rebbe'el's not happy with his answer. Like a part of him, he says, I come into the shir. Now in Kamenetz, I'm used to, anyone can ask any question you want. But, so I'm used to that. In brisk, it's not like that. 8 months you have to wait before you can ask a kasha by Rebbe'el. But he didn't know that. He's used to Kamenetz. Kamenetz, anyone can ask a kasha. You can ask anything you want. Shir Kloli, random people would ask, and Rav Shiner would go, Dizok's good. You're saying good, like that. It was very chilled, not in brisk, not chilled. So what's going on? So he says, he comes to the shir the first day, but a kasha he came in before, he was talking to the oilam, and it was a good kasha. Everyone agreed with it, it was a good kasha. So he comes to the shir, the middle of Barrel is giving shir, and he pipes up in his kasha. No one asks kashas and brisk your first date. You don't do this. This is against the law. And Ribeiro looks at him. He's quiet for a second. And he continues giving shir. Rav Shiner is not fazed. He waits. And a second later, he asks the kasha again, louder. The Ribeiro stops a little longer, looks at him, and then continues giving shir. Rav Shiner is not fazed. He asks the kasha again, louder. This time, Rebbe'el stops. He looks at him. He goes, maybe learn the sugya. So now a tumult breaks out in the shir because everybody knew the kasha. That was a good kasha. Everyone's going crazy. The place is on fire until Rishlama Feivel Shustel goes, no, you're learning wrong pshat the Gemara. This is the pshat. He explains why he was learning wrong pshat and why the Rabbi was right. He says, for the next 8 months, I said nothing in shir. And finally, one day, I was sitting in shir, and Rebbe maybe didn't appear so much that day, and he was struggling with something, and I asked the kasha. I spoke halfway out loud to myself about a rush, and Rebbe heard me say the rush, and he jumped on the rush, and he grabbed the rush, and he went with it for the rest of the shir. And then after that, every day we learned, I was like a chavrusa shaf with Rebbe. By the time I left, I had to go back to Kamenitz, and I went to say goodbye to Rebbe. He said to me, I said to him, you should know, the one thing I'm going to miss is your shir when I'm leaving. So he was mitake what he said the first day. I'll go upon him, that's Kamenitz. Kamenitz can ask whatever you want, but nobody expected him to know Mar Nevuchim. Yeah, Baba Kama, Baba Metzia, Baba Basra, Baba Mar Nevuchim. He said to me that day on that plane, I learned something very important. I had two chavrusa shafs with the Rishayner. I had the long one that was the short one, and the short one that was the long one. I had one that I learned with him for a year and a half, but I didn't understand who he was. I came out, yeah, he knows Chumash, he knows Gemara, but I didn't understand. And then I had a short one, 6 hours, 7 hours on the plane, and I came out, I understood that this man knows everything. One final story for you to understand who Rabbi Yitzchak Shiner was. Why you don't understand a person with your Shemayim, when he says, you can't, if you have Mezidim on your back, you can't continue life. It's the real thing. He was the real thing. I want to tell you one last story. And this is a story really that should go back, it should have happened 500 years ago. It shouldn't have happened in this dar. It doesn't make sense that it happened in this dar. It's a story from like, I don't even know, maybe the Rosh Yeshiva could say who it should have been. But it happened, and this started, I heard it from the person I have it to. His name is Oskar Wassing, and he was a Talmud of Rabbi Yitzchak Shiner in Switzerland. Rabbi Yitzchak Shiner was a Rosh Yeshiva in Switzerland for Tkufa for 4 years because his Shver was sick, and he went to Switzerland, and he had to come help him, and he came to help him, and they asked him to be Rosh Yeshiva in Montreux, the city of Montreux, and he was Rosh Yeshiva over there in Switzerland. That's where he met Aviyaza Wolfson. I'll go upon him. So this guy, Oskar Wassing, he tells me like this. And with this, we conclude, Rabbi Yisrael. And I hope you take this Yisrael, Dove Godel, Dove Katan, because really, Yisrael for life. You understand? It's mamish. You have to do a paradigm shift. So you have to switch things around. Priorities. A lot of things that you think are important are not important. Things that you think are important are not. Things that you think are, right? You understand what I'm saying? It's mamish. Davar gadol, davar katan. Baruch Hashem Yisoid is the Yisoid for life. You get here a second. What's important? What's not important? This last story. You walk out with understanding what Rosh Yeshiva, what chinuch really is. I call this man the master of chinuch. On the cover, the subtitle says the master of psychology of chinuch. I'll explain to you what I mean. You'll see what I'm talking about in this story. In the yeshiva Beit Hazman in the summer, the Rosh Yeshiva would get up what's coming to the Beis Medrash. One day he would say, Rabbi said, today you have half a day off. You have a whole day off today. They weren't off for like months. They were off. He would give them a day off or half a day off, and they would go and do whatever they wanted to do. Most guys would go swimming in the lakes. They have beautiful lakes over there. They would go swimming. But this guy, Oskar Wassing, he liked to mountain climb. He liked going mountain climbing. I said to him, what, you're like a professional? I'm not a professional. I'm not, but I have the equipment. I have the hammers and the picks and all these things that you need to know to go mountain climbing. Now, personally, I have zero taiva to go mountain climbing. I could barely rappel. I hate the idea of walking off a cliff backwards. It just really doesn't do good things for me. I said, if Hashem wanted us to do that, he would make us able to do that, right? But anyways, I go upon him. The point is, this guy was a mountain climber. I always joke around this. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. He gave, everyone wants to do something. There's someone who wants to do everything. There's a guy who likes the garden. I don't like garden, but there's a guy who likes the garden. His whole life is gardening. Plants, trees, everyone likes something. Guy makes cups, whatever. Kids, the point is, there's always someone to do something. I'll go upon him. So this guy liked mountain climbing, and he had the equipment. And that day, the Rosh Yeshiva said, we're going, you can do whatever you want. So he says, he gets his equipment, he gets his gear together, and he's going to go mountain climbing. A friend comes over to him and says, hey, Oscar, can I come with you? Now, here's where Oscar made a mistake. You know why? Because going mountain climbing is dangerous. And that's if you know what you're doing. If you don't know what you're doing, it's suicidal. It's not a joke. It's the real thing. You ever went mountain climbing? Good, don't. Anyway, so this guy comes. But he said, I made a mistake, and I let the guy come with me. So off we go, mountain climbing up these like steep mountain faces, these like Alps type of mountains, right? And we're climbing, and nobody even knew. We left the yeshiva, we went mountain climbing, and it's getting dark, and we start to climb, and we get to a place on the rock where we can't continue, we can't go further. We're stuck. Now, if it was me, he said, just me, maybe somehow I'll find a crevice to stick my toe in and jump up, but I couldn't do it with him. There's no way in the world. So now we're stuck, and like we have to climb back down. And going back down a mountain when it's 10 o'clock at night and it's pitch dark, you can't see where you're going. Imagine for yourself what it's like. That's what it was like, but worse, because this guy had no idea what he was doing. And they're slipping and sliding, and they're tumbling down the brambles, the rocks. This is really what happened. They were caught. By the time they got down to the bottom of that mountain, it's 12 o'clock at night, pitch black. They're completely destroyed. They're exhausted beyond words. And it's by the time they get back to the town, it's like 1 o'clock in the morning. And the lights are on, like brilliant lights. And what happened? They called the police. The police called the army. Now they're looking for these two boys. And it's not, you know, imagine if Chas v'Shalom, if two guys went off, you know, she was thinking like, two guys by mountain climbing, and imagine, it's not a geschmack thing for Rosh Yeshiva. His beard would turn white overnight if such a thing happened. Like upon him, that's what happened. And now they come to the thing, the police are looking, they say, no, it's us, you're looking for us, we're back. Okay, the lights go off, the police go back, the army goes back, and now they're going back to the yeshiva. And the guy says to them, I'm not mekana you, he says. The Rosh Yeshiva wants to see you. So the other guy said, the amateur guy said, I can't do this. I can't go in. You go in, Oscar. I'm not going in. Oscar says to me, I'm so exhausted. I am so mentally exhausted that it doesn't even mean anything to me. Nothing means anything to me right now. I'm so exhausted that whatever the Rosh Yeshiva could say won't do anything because I'm so tired. I come into Rosh Yeshiva. Now, this is what I mean by small is big and big is small, because most Rosh Yeshivas, if they had a Talmud that did this, you could imagine how the conversation would go. Right? You could imagine. The Rosh Yeshiva, he said the Rosh Yeshiva, his face was white. He looked like he had gone through Gehenna the last few hours. He didn't say a word to Asker. Not a word. He took him to the office. He takes out a first aid kit. And he starts cleaning the cuts on his face and the cuts on his arms with peroxide and cleaning it and bandaging it. Okay? This is what he did after thinking he lost the Talmud on the mountains. When he finished cleaning it, he called a taxi, and he took his Talmud home to his house. And somehow he let his wife know that they're coming, and there was a bowl of soup waiting on the kitchen table. Now here's what I said this story should have happened 500 years ago, because the Shiva sat him down at the table, and he was so tired he couldn't do anything. He fed him the soup, spoonful for spoonful. 500 years ago. Spoonful to spoonful. Just fed him a spoon after spoon of soup to his Talmud. Not a word of Musar, not a word of reproach, not a word of, he didn't yell at him, he didn't scream at him, nothing. He just fed him soup. You understand? This is like the epitome of the psychology of chinuch. This is like Rabbi Sai. This is chinuch. When he finished feeding him the soup, he takes him back to the yeshiva in a taxi, into his dorm room, and he helps him get into pajamas. And he puts him under his blanket. And then he said to him, do me a favor. Please, don't ever do that again. Oscar Vassing said to me, if he would have yelled at me, I don't know, it wouldn't have mattered. But when he fed me soup, and he put me into bed, and he put me in pajamas and tucked me in, and he said to me in the sweetest, most loving, most beautiful way in the world, don't do it again. That was it. He was kind to me for life right there. You understand what happened over here? He switched it around. He was kind to him for life. For the rest of his life, the rest of Rabbi Yitzchak's life, Oscar Vassing would come to, every time he came to Yerushalayim, he would wear a hat and jacket. You know, he didn't wear a hat and jacket. But when he came to his Rosh Yeshiva, he would wear a hat and jacket and would come into his Rosh Yeshiva to be Mechab the Rosh Yeshiva, because that was it for the rest of his life. Because you understand what happened here? This is what it is. This is the yesoid. It's like you take this yesoid and apply it to life. It goes to every situation and every scenario. Is applicable. And this is why I say it's not just a story from now. It's a story for 500. It's a story. It's like chinuch from the ages. It's a timeless chinuch story. This is Rabbi Yitzchak Shaida. People don't understand. They're gonna read this book. They're gonna understand finally what it was they lost, because they have no idea. It's like they owned a diamond. They didn't know they had it. They lost the diamond. They found out they had a diamond, but they didn't know they had a diamond. Rabbi Sai, we're going into Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Take this with you, Rabbi Sai. Remember, but not just Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Take it with you for the year. Remember, what's important? That's really the word. What's davar gadol in our lives? What's the davar katan in our lives? That's the shaykh we should ask ourselves every day. What is big? What is small? The moment we really understand that is the moment we're going to become great ourselves.